Welcome to The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman. Bruce, we're going to be joined a little bit later in the podcast by Manny Navarro, our colleague, who is in South Florida and so plugged in on the scene there. We wanted to talk about some spring storylines at those big three Florida schools. We woke up Wednesday, the day we're recording this, to news that the Reggie Bush has finally gotten his Heisman back. The Heisman Trust has reinstated his trophy, acknowledging that there have been some rules changes in college sports lately, and it might be time to correct that. It's a big deal, and it's crazy to think how long this went on. That Heisman, he won it in 2005. The sanctions came down in 2010, and he's getting it back in 2024. You worked closely with Reggie on the Big Noon show there for a few years, and I think you have some particular insights into this.
Yeah, look, I feel like this was long overdue. I would imagine if you had everybody who is at the Heisman presentation, who has won a Heisman, you know, usually they stand behind the announcement. If you had all those guys and had them being honest and say, okay, how many of you got something either from a booster or something in recruitment or something along the lines that would be deemed as an improper benefit, I would bet you a bunch of hands would be raised. And I'm sure that more than a handful of them probably have shared some of those stories privately. You know, Reggie, what usually takes for the NCAA to catch somebody is for somebody to be aggrieved. And it almost never happens with a booster scandal because by nature, they're boosters. And so they're loyal to their school. That's why they're giving money to probably players or coaches or whoever else they're donating to or giving to. In Reggie's case, it was not a booster at all. It was somebody trying to lure him or get him to leave USC or when he leaves USC, which is kind of like a little bit of a backwards way of the scandal. But then they got sideways with Reggie's family, and then it got really, really messy. I know this from, you know, having worked with Reggie for a few years and having a lot of conversations with him. I think it was really hard for him kind of wearing that, the fact that especially when he's a San Diego guy, but you know, Southern California native, USC was the powerhouse in college football. They won national championships, and then he moved on to the NFL. The NCAA hammered them, and the program started to fall apart. And I think to a lot of people, that scandal had a big role in USC falling apart, and especially with the sanctions. And I think Reggie Bush was the reason for that, for the NCAA to come down on them the way they did. And I think that was hard for him. And I think also, I think he saw a lot of hypocrisy and wait a minute, I'm the one who's getting the face of this when I know. And again, we didn't talk about this, but I suspect in a lot of NFL locker rooms, he played in the NFL for a decade, he probably heard from a lot of people who also got taken care of. We all know that was going on all over the country, maybe not to the same degree, maybe to the same degree. And so I think that was really, really hard for him. He and I had a lot of conversations and talked for a long time when NIL first went through. And so I have a story that went up a few years ago, which I think holds up now because it's like Reggie's talking through kind of the money reality of what back then. And one of the things he did say, which I thought was, because he made millions from if NIL was in place even before social media, because obviously this is 2004, 2005. You know, it wasn't like there was Instagram. It wasn't like there was Twitter at that point where people can just have like an open mic and can promote themselves like that. What he could have done if it was in place was, especially with the visibility he had, and with the access to big money donors, in addition to the access, he's in the biggest market that college football has in Los Angeles. He could have gone any big money USC person could have said, hey, I want to have a birthday party for my kid and I want to have Reggie Bush there for an hour. Reggie Bush could have gotten $250,000 probably doing that. And if you do, you know, 10 of those off season, for an hour, you are making a ton of money. I don't doubt how much, and who's to say what would have been a lot or a little. And so, you know, one of the things Reggie did take out of that was like, hey, look, you know, I'm good with what happened to me in his own way, because he said, because it had to happen to me so we could get to this, to here, to this point where college athletes, not just college football players, you know, it could be women's volleyball players, could be tennis players, it could be soccer players, gymnasts, whatever, are reaping the benefits. And we've seen that all over the college sports world.
I wrote about this in my column that went up on Wednesday. You know, you look back now at the things that brought down USC, it more so specifically like turned Reggie Bush into a villain, and they seem kind of quaint and silly now. In fact, to your point, and you know, you wrote about it in that story 4 years ago, like for the most part, it was his family benefiting from it, not him. They were living in a house for free in San Diego. And yet, you know, he goes down as the villain. And really, as time went on, I think that he got, you know, completely recast. You know, he's you've seen it firsthand. He's idolized by the younger generation. And just the whole attitude around players receiving money, even before NIL became a thing, you know, legally. You know, I remember when Todd Gurley got in trouble for signing autographs. He got suspended for 4 games. And people are like, that seems kind of ridiculous. But it was definitely not the case in 2010. I mean, it would be rewriting history to say that those sanctions came down and people are immediately like, whoa, that's way too harsh. Like, the mindset of all of college sports for so long was there is nothing worse than getting extra benefits, that it's the cardinal sin. And so once, and it was actually Yahoo that originally broke the story about the family living in the house for free and hotel rooms and plane tickets, like that was seen as salacious. And so I think it was many years before people started to rethink that scandal as like, wait a minute, they got a 2-year bowl ban and 30 scholarships lost. And to your point, the guys were kind of just like, you know, wannabe agents. They weren't even really established people. They weren't recruiting him to USC. They weren't USC boosters. And, you know, USC to this day, to the Pete Carroll teams, a lot of people just say, oh, they were cheating. how? This, if anything, like you said, this what these guys were doing was to try to motivate him to turn pro.
Yeah, and I think it's knowing what we know and from lots of conversations that have happened, I again, if you think that he was the only person or his family was the only one getting compensated before NIL went through, you're living in a dreamland. It's not to say everybody's cheating, but a lot of schools, especially ones who are winning, you know, people who've worked at those schools are like, come on, it's like you're kidding yourself if you don't think there's a lot of shady stuff going on.
My thing is at this point, like I am done. Like, I'm never going to look at a player unfavorably for receiving money, because at the end of the day, they're making, they're still making. What's that?
Is there a turning point where you're like, okay, I see.
Well, we've talked about this many times in the past, that the Jerry Sandusky situation, just all of a sudden, all the stuff that we used to be like, oh, they should get the death pound, didn't seem all that important anymore. But also just, I think I've, as the years went on, got more. The other thing was covering the Ed O'Bannon trial. The Ed O'Bannon trial was basically the first time that the whole concept of amateurism, like that 3-week trial was basically like amateurism on trial. And the defense was so ridiculous that you kind of came to realize like this whole thing has been kind of a farce this whole time. But who I don't, where I still stand firm or still like don't have much sympathy for is when the coaches break the rules. They're the adults in the room. They know the rules. And so I bring this up because we had another NCAA infractions case finally come down, I think last week, Arizona State. This was 3 years in the making for if you need a refresher course. ASU got in trouble because somebody, do we know who to this day provided the envelope? Like a dossier just showed up at the door of the NCAA with all the details and all the receipts. that ASU during that time when, you know, there was a dead period after COVID hit where you could not, you know, host recruits, that not only were they hosting recruits, they were paying for guys travel and, you know, there were guys getting, like, it was just basically a full on recruiting scandal. And so took 3 years for this to resolve. It finally comes out this week that, well, it's still not fully settled, but several staff members who were involved in this got show causes. Most notably, Herm Edwards. Herm Edwards got a 5-year show cause. And the reason that's noteworthy to me, well, there's several, but one of them is that Michael Crow, the president, and Ray Anderson, the AD, actually had the audacity at the time when he was still the coach to tell people that basically he had nothing to do with it. These were rogue actors, these staff members doing these illegal things, and it didn't involve Herm. Well, it absolutely involved Herm, or he wouldn't get a 5-year show cause. And so, I don't know, the Herm Edwards era was so strange in so many ways, but the ultimate legacy of it is that they got in trouble, they lose scholarships, all that stuff. And the coach who oversaw it got his $4.4 million buyout when he got fired and is back on ESPN. And the AD, Ray Anderson, he kind of semi-retired. He's now a professor at the law school, but he's getting his full $950,000 salary that he got as an AD. And Michael Crow, of course, is still their president, has been forever. It's just one of those infuriating moments where the people who were responsible didn't suffer in any way. But the players who were deemed ineligible, their records get vacated. The current staff has fewer scholarships to work with and so on.
Would you feel better if Herm Edwards was only talking about NFL on ESPN instead of college football too?
I hadn't thought of that. I mean, if I were ESPN, I wouldn't have him talking about college football. Like, would you? Would you have a guy who's like just basically been caught cheating in college as a college football coach being a college football analyst? I don't know. It's not, I hadn't really thought of that. I still think of him as an NFL analyst. I barely even knew he was analyzing college football, to be honest. No, I mean, I think there needs to be more scrutiny. Like, it just speaks to the apathy of ASU football there that I don't really see any sort of outrage. And in fact, one columnist there basically wrote a column portraying Herm as the victim in all this. I just don't see any outrage for Michael Crow, the president of a public university, a prominent public university, just out there lying to people and protecting his AD and protecting his coach, and nothing will come of it.
The worst punishment probably for ASU right now is the fact that Fafita and T-Mac decided to stay in Tucson. I think that's probably the worst punishment for them.
Well, that's the thing. There's the Board of Regents in that state oversees both those universities. And Arizona has its own issues with the budget, and we miscalculated the amount of cash on hand. The AD got fired, the president's resigning. I think they're too busy with that to notice a little ASU football issue. Why don't we get to our guest?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. $5, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, Stu, and now we're pleased to be joined by our guest. Manny Navarro has been on the UM beat forever, it seems like, and he does an awesome job. As somebody who went to UM and still tries to keep an eye on it, I love the work he does. So right now, this is year three for Mario Cristobal. It was an up and down run. They had a big win over Texas A&M, which felt bigger than it really was. But then all of a sudden, they kind of fizzled. So we got Cam Ward in there, a quarterback. That was a huge get. Is this team, with the 12-team playoff, do you think they're good enough, talented enough to be a legit playoff contender?
Well, I did not expect you to go all the way up to playoff contender right off the bat. What about top 25?
I'm thinking they're a playoff contender. That's my, and I'll get into my reasoning after Manny.
Yeah, I think the reason they're a playoff contender is because they can win the ACC this year. And I know it feels like we do this every offseason, right? Like, well, Miami had a great offseason. They signed a bunch of really good recruiting classes. Look at all the transfers they got. And we kind of sit here and go, okay, maybe this is the year that Miami comes back. I think the reason I'm optimistic, two reasons, really. One, the way they won the Clemson game last year. And I know Clemson was a shell of itself compared to what it's been in previous years when it was winning championships and winning the ACC. But the physicality, right, the whole build that Mario has been doing with the offensive and defensive line, that's real. I think that translates to winning conferences and to being a playoff team. The second part is Cam Ward. I think he very well could be the best quarterback in the league this year. And if you have the best quarterback in the league, you're probably going to have a chance to win the ACC every single year. And Miami not only has Ward, they've got some really good receivers coming back in Xavier Restrepo and Jacoby George. I know they're really high on Isaiah Horton. So they like what they have, and it seems it's trending this way. It may happen here in the next few days, but it looks like they may also get Damian Martinez out of the transfer portal. So you put all of that on offense, you bring Ruben Bain on defense. Like, I think they're good enough to win the ACC. I'm not saying they're going to win the ACC, but I think they're good enough to with that build, that construct. And if they do that, then they'll make the playoff. So yes, I agree. They are a playoff contender.
Yeah. I think what they have just from talking to people down at UM this past week is, you know, especially if you get, look, Damian Martinez is a bruising running back who can make you miss. He doesn't have great top end, but he could be a big factor for them. I know he, from what I understand, he canceled a visit to Kentucky that was supposed mm-hmm. to happen, and that probably encourages Miami folks a little more. I suspect they will try to add another receiver, because if you have Cam Ward, you're going to throw the ball a bunch. And so I think if they do that, and there's a one I heard that they feel like they have a really good shot at, that would help. The offensive line, for what you said, Manny, Mario, people remember what he had at Oregon and the talent he developed. And I think you see those pieces, and some of those guys were young and they're coming along. I love Bain. I think he is a dominant defensive line, and I think he's exactly what Miami needs. They need more of him. And I don't know, and you know this better than me, like, I don't know, do they have to add more in the back seven? Do they need another transfer DB? But again, I think because Cam Ward to me is so good and so talented, and in that system with that offensive line, I think he is going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And I think the other thing that he brings, Miami missed kind of a leadership piece at that position. And everything you hear is just like, this guy is such a, I hate to use the term alpha, but he is such a you know what, if it doesn't go his way on one play, I'm going to get him the next. I'm going to get him this time. As opposed to Miami was missing that the last few years. I don't feel like they had that kind of strong leader at that position when things might not have gone right. And I think they have that now. So I do think they're going to be a playoff team. I don't know if it's going to, I'm not saying they can win a national title, but I think this will be the step to go from, okay, they can, I think they can win 9 games. And I think that's what it takes to be a playoff team. I think they can be 9-3.
I did not go into this podcast intending to be the devil's advocate role, but my goodness, the hype. My computer is starting to get hot from all the heat coming out of this screen. Here's what I would ask you guys. So Cam Ward's a very exciting player. I enjoyed watching him, but he was also very inconsistent at Washington State. I just looked it up. He was the 41st rated passer in the country last season. Quite coincidentally, you know,
I know who's
take
above
a guess
him.
Who number 40 is.
Tyler Van Dyke.
Tyler Van Dyke, the guy who is now gone from Miami to Wisconsin, who Cam Ward is replacing. But you were there, you saw him this spring, Manny. Like, what gives people confidence that he's going to, because I feel like we've gone through, I'd go all the way back to Ja'Cory Harris, frankly. Mm. Brad Kaya, remember him? Like, this string of like, oh, Max, this is going to be the guy. Yeah. And then they don't quite pan out. Why is Cam Ward different?
I think Bruce kind of hit it on the head, the whole alpha thing. That's been Mario's mantra here for like the last 3 or 4 months. We've got an alpha. We've got an alpha at the quarterback position. What does that mean? Tyler Van Dyke, yes, he won the ACC Rookie of the Year Award. Yes, he flashed with Rhett Lashley as coordinator. But once he came out of that offense and Mario slowed things down and they weren't playing with pace, they lost something at the position. And they needed somebody who was cerebral, somebody who could lead the locker room, could get guys fired up. And the first thing Cam Ward did when he got here was take the entire offensive line out to eat. Like, this is, hey, I'm going to go out and spend thousands on you at a really nice restaurant. I think he took him to Fogo de Chao and, you know, picked up the bill. Then he's, you know, every single day he's with the wide receivers, inviting them to his house. They're hanging out together. Like, this is a much more real relationship with quarterback. Whereas Tyler, everything I heard during his time here was, hey, he likes hanging out with Xavier Streppo. He'll go play golf. But he isn't that guy who's necessarily going to go and put his arm around everybody in the locker room and do those kind of things. And so for Mario, that's why there's this sort of like, hey, we've got a different guy leading this team now. Whereas with Tyler, there just really wasn't. And so he thinks that's going to be the X factor for Miami and why this year will be different. I agree that there are still holes on this team. Bruce, you mentioned the secondary. I think it's very hard to replace Cam Kitchens, who, yes, there were times where he made some mistakes, but he was pretty consistent back there. And I think James Williams will be missed. I think safety is a concern, but they're trying to address that. So if they address it, and if Cam Ward lives up to the expectations, Stu, I think this could finally be the year that Miami lives up to those expectations.
Two things. First of all, when you said Fogo de Chao, so we're doing this full disclosure on a Zoom. There's a triangle of faces. Stu is on the upper left. I'm in the right. Manny's below it. I literally thought I was going to see Andy Staples pop. Long since gone to company. Fogo de Chao, I thought Andy Staples was going to reappear. Second of all, when you look at their schedule here, now they play on the road at UF. UF is in a big rebuild. We'll get to them in a minute. FAMU, Ball State, then USF is on the road. They were much better than they were last year. Virginia Tech is at home. They got to go to Berkeley to play Cal. At Louisville, I think will be good. Florida State has to go to Miami. Duke has to, Manny Diaz homecoming back to Miami. They play at Georgia Tech. They play Wake Forest at home, and then they play Syracuse. In that schedule, I feel like Miami will be the more talented team in 10, at least, if not 11 games. They might even be the more talented team in all the games because Florida State lost a bunch of really good players.
Yeah, I don't think it's far-fetched. I don't.
Let's talk about Florida State. Last year's ACC champ should have been playoff team. Lost a ton of guys, obviously, whose names are going to get called in the draft this week. They also went to the Pacific Northwest to find their new quarterback, our old friend, DJ Uiagalelei. I don't think anybody expects Florida State to win 13 games this year, but how much confidence do we have in Mike Norvell and the ability he has shown to reload there through the portal? that this team could possibly at least win the ACC again.
I personally have a lot of confidence in Florida State and what Mike Norvell is doing. I think, you know, I was at the ACC championship game, and the quarterback play was obviously atrocious, and they still won that game against a pretty good Louisville team pretty decisively because of how great their defense was. They've got to replace a few guys on that defensive side. But I think Norvell is, I mean, he's getting credit now, right? He was the ACC Coach of the Year, but I think he's still sort of very underrated for his play calling and what he does on the offensive side of the ball and what he does in terms of developing quarterbacks. And we just spent a bunch of time talking about Cam Ward. Stu, I mean, I thought when this was all going on and I, you know, was talking to Max Olson, you know, when Ward was in the transfer portal, the sense I got was that if Cam Ward was going to stay in college, he probably was going to end up going to Florida State because Norvell and the system that he ran there. And ultimately, when he entered his name in the draft, that changed everything and he ended up with DJ Uyunglele. But, you know, I think Norvell certainly has the respect of the players as far as, hey, if you want to go and improve and have a real chance to develop, you got to go to Florida State and play for Mike Norvell on the offensive side of the ball. And so I think, you know, I know there were some fans complaining about DJ's performance. He was 12 of 26 or something like that in the spring game. Didn't really throw for a lot of yards. I think DJ is a perfect fit for that offense. I think the people around Florida State feel like he's a really good fit and that they're going to be successful. I just think they've got to try to go out and find a few wide receivers. I know they got a late start here on the spring transfer portal window, but if they can get a few receivers to pair up with Malik Benson, who the Alabama transfer, who everybody thinks is he could be a number one guy, they can get a couple of other guys around him that can play receiver. Then maybe this Florida State offense is right back to being what it was a year ago.
I like DJ in the fit too, because look, Mike Norvell is going to run QB counter, and DJ is a huge man who's athletic. I think that fits. They want to run, you know, they're going to run their gap scheme and wear people out on it. And there's a lot of, you know, it's a different passing offense than I think a lot of people you're used to seeing, at least if you're watching from an NFL side. But the question is, how good can DJ be? I think he'll be good. I don't, you know, I mean, I'm with Stu. I think there's going to be some drop off because they lost so many good players. I mean, you had two dominant defensive linemen there. I mean, they had other good players in the front seven, but Jared Verse should be a top 15 pick. And Braden Fisk was just an animal at Florida State and was so disruptive and so relentless. And you saw him, especially in the ACC title game, take over. I'm interested, like Stu, you framed it a certain way where it's like, do you trust or do you believe Mike Norvell? I absolutely do. I think he's a terrific coach, and I think he's got that thing rolling. I think he's got a good staff. You know, it's just, we'll see how this all comes together. But I think I'd put him as also a top 15. I think they are, you know, if I had to guess right now, I think they are one of the true playoff contenders in the ACC.
A lot of parallels, really, as I look at it now.
Let me ask you, you didn't weigh in on this. So, DJ, are you buying DJ as a quarterback who can lead a team to a playoff?
I was just about to say, if I'm going to call out Cam Ward for being the 41st ranked passer, it should be noted that DJ was the 43rd rated passer. And that's despite the fact that I think most people think he did improve from what we saw at Clemson. Certainly at Oregon State, he had he had Damian Martinez in his backfield and Jonathan Smith's a great offensive coach. I think he has a ceiling, but I think it's not like his ceiling is higher now than it was at Clemson. We'll put it that way. For reasons that have been discussed over and over, like things just didn't end well there for him with Clemson. Now he's on to his third school. He's a fifth year senior. Yeah, I guess I'm less concerned about that, guys, than just like Bruce alluded to. Like, is there another Jared Verse waiting behind them? I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to put too much into the Orange Bowl, but that was Florida State without all those dudes. So now, obviously, they've brought in transfers since then, most notably a quarterback. So I'm not saying that's any sign of like they're going to implode this year by any means. I don't know. All this is making me realize how wide open the ACC is.
I have a buddy who's really familiar with Florida State's roster, who does a ton of scouting, who said to me that watching Marvin Jones Jr. in the spring game gave him thoughts that maybe this is another Jermaine Johnson type talent. So they feel that between Patrick Payton and Marvin Jones Jr. and some of the other D tackles, they did pick up Daryl Jackson from Miami, who was a starter from Miami. He didn't get to play last year because of the transfer rules at that time. But Daryl is a guy who's going to be in at D tackle. They've got Joshua Farmer, who they like, that was second team all conference last year. I don't think there's going to be much of a drop off. I know it's hard to say that with some of the guys they lost, but I think from a talent perspective, they think they've got enough talent on the defensive line to be just as good there as they were a year ago.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right. Speaking of quarterbacks, Florida, last year they had the transfer quarterback that came in and people were kind of underwhelmed with Graham Mertz. He actually ended up having a decent season. I don't think he's the reason they went 5-7. But in their spring game, people had already like moved on. It's Graham Mertz is the starter by all indications, but the DJ Lagway era got off to a pretty impressive start in the spring game. Do we think he could be the Gators QB1 at some point this season?
I think there's a chance. I think if the season goes sideways and Florida sort of moves into the, all right, we're firing the athletic director, which very well could happen. We're moving on from the football coach. We want DJ Lagway to be a part of our future. I think that's certainly in play. I think Graham Mertz is going to be the number one because he is the most prepared. And as you said, had a pretty good season last year. I mean, 72% completion percentage. What was it? 20 touchdowns and only three picks last year. He had a really good season. And I think what I've heard in terms of coming out of the spring game was DJ Lagway. Yes, he flashed and he certainly has a lot of potential, but he's still not where he needs to be in terms of learning the offense and being ready to sort of take over. That said, there will be packages for him the same way there were packages for Tim Tebow when he got to Florida and played as a freshman. So I think Lagway will be involved, but I think only once Florida season sort of goes sideways and there's this feeling of it's time to move on, it's time to start with the future now, will he probably take over as a starting quarterback?
I feel like Manny has indirectly tried to summons Andy Staples a couple times. No, he just did it. As soon as I heard him say, and if they can fire the AD and then fire the coach, I'm like, man, I feel like Andy's going to pop up here one way or the other.
Can I just interject real quick? If Manny, if you're suggesting it would take Billy Napier getting fired for this guy to start, don't you, then if I'm Billy Napier, as soon as I lose the first game, why wouldn't I just, if that seems like his fate, like
let me
just give it over to the young guy and see if he can save my job.
That to me, that sounds like you're throwing up a Hail Mary though, Stu, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, what I would impress upon you, and I feel like I'm saying this directly to you, is what people talk about in a spring game is not what the coaches see
Yeah.
every day they're around them in meetings, in walkthroughs, in
Sure.
practice. So I think he knows, okay, if this guy can really, I mean, there's very few people who are like, okay, when the lights are bright and you can't tackle him, like, as opposed to, and maybe look, I've seen DJ Lagway at Elite 11. It wasn't like a, in a game setting, but there's very few guys who, Lamar Jackson would certainly be this way. When they're live, nobody can tackle them. And I think they're different, but it's just, I don't think, as you guys said, I don't think it's the quarterback piece that's just it. I think Graham Mertz is fine. Like, I don't know. I mean, Stu, do you think Graham Mertz, like, if Graham Mertz was at Florida State compared to DJ, I know the offense is different. They're DJ, not DJ Lagway, obviously. Would you feel that much differently about Florida State?
Well, the thing with Mertz was, okay, so he comes in, off not great season at Wisconsin and then lays an egg in the first game against Utah. And I feel like he
We
never.
all did, though. That was that team was looked so unprepared for that.
Yeah. And so he never really shook that reputation. And look, let's also not forget Florida lost. Florida ended the season on a 4-game losing streak. He had some good games in there. He was actually decent against Georgia, but all anybody remembers is the 4-game losing streak.
Can I just throw this out there just for the sake of clarity? Here are Graham Mertz's numbers last year. He completed 73% of his passes and had a 20-3 TD to interception ratio.
I know.
There's a lot of coaches around the country who would take those numbers.
I bet a lot of people that just heard that are stunned to hear that because it's
I'm
not
stunned.
like
I just read
Graham
it.
Mertz was getting all this attention. I mean, what I mainly remember is that shootout against LSU where Jaden Daniels basically clinched the Heisman. And in that same game against that bad LSU defense, Mertz was 26 to 38 for 311 and a touchdown. Not too shabby. So I'm sorry, you said would I feel differently about Florida State if he was the quarterback instead of DJ? I think I'd feel about the same. But are you saying I should feel more confident if it were Mertz?
No, I feel like not to the same degree as DJ, but Graham Mertz was a huge recruit for Wisconsin, right? I remember seeing him in high school and he was impressive. Like, he's not bad. Maybe I'm a big Graham Mertz believer. I'm not saying, oh, if you told me Graham Mertz was a first pick in the first round pick, I would be surprised, but I think he's got plenty of ability. I think around him, there's like, if you look on their defense, like Cam Jackson is a unique player. He's whatever he is, 6'6". Now he's like 365 with long arms. And like, they have some guys there. It's just like, can they get the pieces together? And it's hard when everybody else, the fact that Manny said what he said, and I don't fault you for this, Manny, but like, we're talking about like maybe the AD being fired, which is a bigger issue than certainly just football.
Yeah.
But it's like, when you have that kind of stuff and the pressure, like, again, I will say this for the 33rd time. Like, I thought Billy Napier was a good hire. I thought he did a really good job at ULL. And for all sorts of reasons, it has struggled to get traction. And I did, I was at Ari's house watching that Utah Thursday night game. And I was like, wow, they did not look buttoned up or prepared. There was stuff that was going on in that game that doesn't happen to good teams. But it's all, like, he has another year, and I don't know. I guess the question I would ask you guys is, what do you think is successful year after last year? I mean, they only lost by 2 to Mizzou. They were in games. I mean, if you look at this,
Their defense was the problem,
yeah,
Bruce. I mean, they just couldn't really stop anybody. And
and that's the
obviously,
problem the last couple of years.
yeah, that's really been the issue there. And I think they tried to address it in the transfer portal, but the sense I got from people who have been around the team this spring is it's really not that much better, in terms of, the
Well, that's not
difference.
good.
Yeah, so
That's not a good sign.
that's not a good sign. And they've got a horrific schedule. I mean, the last five games of the season are just, I mean, it's a murderer's row of opponents. So I just think for them, a good season would be get to a bowl game, like 6-6 at this point.
Well, that's not going to save his job. Right?
No,
like
no.
Now I would say this: looking at the schedule, they could get off to a 5-0 start. They play Miami, Samford, Texas A&M all at home, then at Mississippi State, and then UCF at home. So he could, you know, some of that noise would definitely fade if they got off to a hot start like that and moved into the top 25. The question is, what happens once they get to this murderer's row, as Manny said, starting in November? Georgia? Sure,
four of those five games are toss-ups, though.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying any, like, I mean, some of those games, like, they might not be favored against Miami or I don't know. But they're not, I mean, none of those teams that I just mentioned were awesome last year. But you get to November, and it's Georgia at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss at Florida State. And remember, this is a team that last year was 5-3 and ended 5-7. So he's got to avoid another season like that.
I mean, there's people that cover the team that have said to me they think it's going to end. That if they get off to a bad start and lose to UCF in week five, that could be the game where Strickland gets fired. And
yeah, don't lose to UCF.
Well, yeah. By the way, UCF, Gus Malzahn has KJ Jefferson, like, that would scare me if I was a defense.
Let's not have this discussion and not mention the fact that they're under the gun with the NCAA over the Jaden Rashada situation. A guy they had to fire Marcus Castro Walker, who's on their staff, which indicates that he's directly implicated in that. So I don't know. The NCAA takes the Arizona State thing took 3 years, so I don't expect like any sort of imminent decision there, but you know, that's certainly playing a factor in the feeling that Scott Strickland in particular and also Billy Napier might be on the hot seat.
Yeah, I would say the one, if you're Florida and you're a Florida fan and you're just worried about the future, as you mentioned, the NCAA stuff, having to hire a new AD, potentially a new football coach, everything I've been told is the school president is very much enamored with sports and very much makes sports a huge priority. So my guess is they probably already have some people in mind if they're going to pull the trigger mid-season to start sort of the comeback. And I know there are certainly a lot of donors, a lot of people who have put money into Florida's NIL that want to see this program go in the right direction. Can they afford, you know, paying Billy Napier $26 million to go away and then, you know, hire a new staff and all that? Who knows how much money it's all going to take. But I just think if you're a Florida fan, know that at least the administration at the school cares about getting this right if the guys that they have in place now don't.
Hey, Manny, before we let you go, I had one question, student. I was going to ask this, but I think it's makes sense to ask it. You've covered recruiting for a long time. You do a great job on that. And you do a really good job covering recruiting for us at The Athletic. So we've talked a little bit about Jeremiah Smith, who was a huge recruit from your backyard, who's now at Ohio State.
Yeah.
We've done some retrospective pieces on recruiting and best players and everything. If I ask you in your lifetime, I'm not going to give you the Larry Bluestein designation of that much of a span.
Yeah.
But in your career of covering it, the three best the three best recruits you've heard about or seen in South Florida, I'm not talking about somebody who's way up in the panhandle, mm-hmm. like from Palm Beach, Dade Broward, who would they be?
Wow. That's a great question, Bruce. I think the only reason I bring up this name is because I think of Jeremiah Smith, and I think this is exactly who Jeremiah Smith is and potentially better. Andre Johnson, who, you know, a Texans, all-timer
this year.
Yeah. I mean, just won a national title with Miami. He was such a freak athlete, and that's really who Jeremiah reminds me of. I think very much same sort of player, same type of physical just beast at the receiver position. So I would say Andre Johnson for sure. a name that most people who probably haven't followed college football as long as we have don't know who I'm talking about, but Willie Williams, the infamous Willie Williams. I thought
you made him infamous, man.
The infamous Willie Williams. I thought he was the second coming of Lawrence Taylor at linebacker. I think when you watched him play at the high school level, he just looked like he was going to be a ridiculous elite pass rusher that would dominate the game for years to come. Obviously ran into legal issues. And the third one is probably Frank Gore. Frank was just such a freak at the running back position, ran for close to 3,000 yards. You know, him and Sean Taylor were both just two of the best running backs I'd ever seen coming out of the high school ranks. And Frank, to go through what he went through with the ACLs and everything else, to come back from that and still finish, what, third on the NFL's all-time rushing list, just to me, those guys, to me, are like the Hall of Famers, the greatest to come out of South Florida since I've been doing this, which is right around the late 90s, early 2000s.
There was a receiver from your area about 10 years ago by the name of Amari Cooper, mm-hmm. who had himself quite a college career. Is that the, could you see Jeremiah Smith having that kind of career?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think he is potentially a multi-time Biletnikoff award winner. Like he could win it as a sophomore and junior, and people will say that's the best receiver I've seen in the last, 50 years.
I don't think I realized. I'd always heard about Andre Johnson, the size-speed combination. I don't think I got how good he was until the Rose Bowl when he was just ragdolling defensive backs in like basically the national title game. And just like you used the word beast, like the physical strength to have that kind of speed and strength. Like I didn't get to see Anquan Boldin in high school. He's a little further up in Pahokee, but just – you hear of guys like that who are just like, doesn't matter if somebody's all over them. They're just such a competitor that like, they're just throwing guys off them, and especially there you're in a shark tank of the best of the best. It's crazy to see.
Guys, I got us.
Go ahead. I was going to say about Andre Johnson, if I could add this, his teammate, I know you know who this is, Bruce, cause you followed Miami for many years, but Roscoe Parrish was Andre Johnson's high school teammate. Roscoe, of course, played on the same championship team at Miami, and they both played for Miami High. And Miami High, obviously decades ago, was one of the best high school football programs in the country. They won national championships and all that stuff. This is the 60s and 70s. But after, all the Cuban immigrants came to South Florida, Miami High was basically a Hispanic high school. It's basically what it became. And so Andre Johnson and Roscoe Parrish, to see them play and to dominate together was just, and Andre, it was like Roscoe would run around in the backfield, throw the ball down the field because he was the quarterback. And Andre Johnson would pull these passes down out of the sky with like four guys draped all over him and then just toss them off and run into the end zone. It was like, yeah, that's amazing to do that in this county, in this area. So that's why Jeremiah Smith, to me, it's like, I look at them physically and I'm like, yeah, this is who, those two guys are just so special.
Guys, sometimes, just to wrap up here, I'll say that sometimes Bruce or I will say something on the podcast, not think much of it, and then like somebody aggregates it. Mm-hmm. I think this episode might set a record. Miami sites are going to be all over Bruce declaring them a playoff team. The Ohio State sites are going to be all over you saying Jeremiah Smith could be a multi-time Biletnikoff winner. And I also, and then the Florida sites or somebody is going to be all over us basically firing Billy Napier and Scott Strickland on the podcast.
So. I don't think the Ohio States are going to, just because I think they already expect that he is that special. I think there's that much buzz on Jeremiah Smith. I think they know.
Multi-time Biletnikoff winner, though, is a big... what's crazy is that we're just coming off the Marvin Harrison Jr. era, and now we're already... But no, I mean, look, I from everything I've heard, seen, he's that. So he's that guy. All right, you can follow Manny on Twitter, catch his work. I mean, yes, we know him primarily as Miami Hurricanes guy, but he writes all about the ACC. And as Bruce said, a great recruiting writer in an area of the country that produces so much great talent. Manny, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Bruce, we'll be back next week. I think it's close to being the end of spring games. We'll have some more to talk about. And we'd love some emails. So send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com, and we'll see you next time.